The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, it's Your Money with David Hayes, live in the studio on this beautiful Thursday. Doug Hughes also joins me riding shotgun. Hey Dougie, what do you think about this incredible day?
I was just thinking this might be the most beautiful day of 2024. I don't know.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I was fishing on Tuesday night. There's a little tournament that, not really an official tournament, but I get together with a bunch of old boys out of Morris Creek, and occasionally I get to fish in it, and I love doing it, not usually just a donation on my behalf, that my $20 donation goes to somebody else. But it was great that night, caught one nice fish, waded in, almost got big bass, it was pretty fun, I didn't even tell you that.
Really?
Awesome, yeah, and then on Saturday, I'm going to take off for the Gulf of Mexico. And we're going to be there for a couple days doing my overnight trip. So we go out, normally a Father's Day trip, but this time it got booted because of weather. And I'm going to head out Sunday morning around 6 a.m., returning to the dock on Tuesday around 4 p.m. So it's a long trip. Going to fish the...
How far out do you go out?
As far as the oil rigs are.
How long does it take to get out to the oil rigs?
Well, here's what happens. We leave at 6 in the morning, catch bait. You've been on these trips before. You head out, and normally we snapper fish, but those aren't in season. So beeliners, I call them, kind of a small snapper. Look for some grouper, some trigger fish, stuff like that. Stuff you'd go out and bottom fish for. Get your limit of those, hopefully, and about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they put the downriggers out. And crack open the big green egg that's sitting on the boat, and we start grilling and head out. And you basically are trolling, and you may catch a mackerel or something like that on the way out. But eventually it gets dark, and you go to bed, you go to sleep. I mean, and then you get out to the rigs around 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and you get up and you start jigging, which is terrible trying to, jigging for a crappie, you just twitch your wrist. Yeah. When you're jigging for fish that are 300-400 feet down, it's from your knees to the top of your head jigging.
Yeah.
And I don't like that part, so I may just sit back. I may sleep. But whenever the daylight cracks, they throw the downriggers out, and they start trolling around the oil rigs.
Wow.
And about 2 hours go by of trolling, and you will catch fish. We caught an 80-pound tuna a couple years ago, and it was sushi-grade tuna. This was not the kind of stuff that...
Cut it open right there.
Oh, incredible, incredible. And we caught a big wahoo. You can't even believe how great it is. So once it's time to head back, you just troll back and hopefully hit a few grouper spots on the way and get back in time to get the fish cleaned up, packaged up, coolered up, and then we'll grab dinner, stay all night, and head back the next morning. So it's an all-day Sunday, pretty much all-day Monday trip, and come back on Tuesday morning. I'm sorry, we'll come back on Tuesday morning. So, yeah, it's fun. I've done it 3 times now, I think, and I look forward to it every single time. Anyway, had a great week. Hope you guys all had a great week as well. Let's talk a little bit about what happened last week in the markets, then we'll get Hot Rod on, because I want to talk to him about the Wall Street Journal article that came out today, why the Fed should cut rates now, not wait until September. Get his feelings on all of that as well. So we have Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And Landslide and the Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with, you guessed it, proper estate planning. Call Lance at 812-323-8300. Well, last week, stocks advanced last week as market leadership shifted amid fresh inflation data and quarterly corporate earnings reports as they rolled in. The S&P was up, the Dow was up, and the NASDAQ, who led all year long, was just barely up. So the Dow has made a big come back here in the last week as well. Because the Dow broke 40,000 again. Harry Dent was finally right, Doug.
Finally right.
The roaring 2000s are finally here.
Yes, yes, yes.
You guys have been listening to the show a long time. Now, I love Harry Dent. I love his demography that he does. I've learned a lot from him. But he has always been wrong when it came to the markets. And he predicted 40,000 a Dow, I think, back in the early 2000s.
Early 2000s, yeah. And it's just 20 some years behind.
That's okay.
Hey, it's long-term investing,
he's the
right?
He's the one that coined the term, do you know the difference between a genius and a quack when it comes to economics? And he paused and he would say, about 30 years.
About 30 years.
So thank you, Harry. Yeah. Thank you for that. I'm not saying he's a quack when it comes to economics, but certainly quack when it comes to predicting markets.
Numbers on the markets,
yeah. So we had the mega cap tech companies obviously had modest gains for the S&P because seven companies dictates, you know, half the return. We've talked about that over and over and over. And the NASDAQ in its first 2 days of the week with promising Dow posting good gains. So here we go. We had narrow trading, second quarter earnings. Dow ended the week with solid gains after three consecutive weeks of trailing the S&P and NASDAQ. And the Dow also closed above 40,000 for the first time it has since May and hit its 52-week intraday high on Friday. So here's what happened. We had some mixed inflation news. Two inflation reports came out last week, PPI and CPI, Producer Price Index. That measures the change in wholesale prices. That actually went up 2.6% in June year over year. That's its largest increase in 16 months. But then by contrast, CPI, which contracts consumer prices, showed that the pace of inflation actually slowed in June, went down. So markets kind of shrugged off the mixed inflation news and conflicting data, instead embracing the cooler CPI data as the choice that made the markets go up. So the Fed is likely taking notes for its next meeting coming up, July 30th to 31st. I don't think they're going to make any action there, but we'll certainly hear what they have to say once they come out. And then this week we had all kinds of stuff going on, mostly just earnings reports, no big economic data. Let's take a quick break, come back, get Hot Rod on the phone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes, Doug Hughes along my side. And now we have another member of the CFCI team, Rod Holloway, the person that handles the investment management down at our office, is now on the phone. Of course, contributor to Glass in the Afternoons on both Monday and Big Show Friday. And Rod, I did a little commentary before you came on how we're starting to see a changing of the guards. We're from the Mag 7 to the other 493 when it comes to the S&P and certainly to the Dow. Has been rolling along here pretty good, above 40,000 for the first time since May. And you would have loved this comment when I talked about it before you came on, that Harry Dent was finally right.
I don't know about what would be the question.
But no, we have finally started to see this momentum shift, and we've seen some pretty big drawdowns on some big names in the past week. But We've been somewhat predicting this value trade that would have to some point come on, and we're not sure how long it will last. That's why you should own a little bit of everything. So just wanted you to comment about that first before I get into an article that was in the Wall Street Journal today that said why the Fed should cut rates now, not wait until September. And I'll get your opinion on that in just a few minutes. But let's talk about the Mag 7 to the other 493.
Yeah, so I think that it's getting a lot of press and a lot of conversation, but I do think that people should probably slow the roll down just a little bit, because let's not forget, the Dow Jones Industrial Average through yesterday's close is up 9.31%. The S&P 500 is up 17.16%. The NASDAQ Composite, 19.89%. So, yes, the Dow Jones has made a nice little move in the last couple of weeks, because it was only up about 4% when those other indices were north of 20 or right around 20 on the S&P 500. So a week or two of a small rotation doesn't create a brand new trend. Now, I do agree that value does have some catching up to do over time, but value's been needing to catch up over time for many, many years. You know, so if you're jumping back and forth between growth and value, thinking you're going to time it, you've probably been setting in value for a number of years, anticipating a catch-up move that just has never happened. And it's kind of like the move right now. While I have said there are great opportunities outside of that Mag 7 that are out there, that doesn't mean the Mag 7's growth is done and over with. They are still one of the companies with the best earnings and revenue growth out there on the street. Are they the highest? Are they most growth-oriented? No, not necessarily. A lot of it is priced in off of that. But we don't want to lose sight of the fact that growth isn't just completely done and trash now. Growth has still dramatically outperformed that value side of the trade. But yes, it is a good positive thing when you begin to see things broaden out. Not only on the value side, but the large cap has been the dominant performer. Well, now the small cap is playing catch up.
Right.
The small cap, probably a month, maybe 2 months ago, was actually negative year to date. It's had a heck of a run, and it is now up 10.5%. It would be within the last 3 months, because as I look at this data, the three-month return for the Russell 2000, 15.27%. Year-to-date, 10.49%. So it's taken this quarter and a big run-up in this quarter for the Russell 2000 to actually get positive. But it is a good thing. Like I said, it is a good thing to see the rally broadening. Now, I guess the only thing I'm saying, don't assume that the Mag 7 are now suddenly dead and worthless companies moving forward. Just don't be beholden to only exposing yourself to the Mag 7, because there are other opportunities out there, both in market cap as well as the value, the blend, or the growth trade.
Well, and I think the market moves in anticipation and adjust on reality, and I think the reality is that rates probably will start trending down, and that's good for small caps, because small caps tend to borrow maybe a little more money than some of the other companies, and that's been a historical trend that we've seen for the last 28 to 30 years that we've been doing this, and I don't see why that would change. Yeah, being in value would almost be like knowing that Caitlin Clark had 19 assists and the Fever still lost. 19 assists, and it's a record number, and they still lost. But you would, you know, I'd hang my hat on that. If I had a player do 19 assists, I'd say they're going to win, but they still lost. So you have to have a little taste of everything. All right, Rod, let's talk about interest rates. So there was an article in the Journal today. Probably didn't see it because we don't get it in paper form anymore at the office. You have to make effort to go online to get it. But here we go. The article says the Fed pushed interest rates above 5% a year ago, determined to achieve two things: much lower inflation and a cool labor market. The article went on to say it has succeeded. Inflation, by its preferred gauge, has fallen from 4.3 to now 2.6, the steepest decline since 1984, and within shouting distance of the Fed's 2% target. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate has risen to 4.1% from 3.6, an increase seldom seen outside of recessions. Now, the things that I thought were good to highlight in this article, and I love this because this is like, hey, go back and play our tapes from 3 years ago or 2 years ago. It says, once burned on inflation, twice shy. The Fed's caution dates back to its infamous prediction in 2021, yeah, so 3 years ago, that inflation would be transitory. GDP was still well below the pandemic trends, and unemployment was still on its long run of a natural level. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then it went on to talk about the risk of waiting, the risk of cutting, and how we are in a no-win political situation. So let's go back and first talk about, you know, the idea on whether they should cut sooner than later or cut now. I don't think they're going to do that in July, but I'm starting to lean more to in the camp that it's possible for September.
Yeah, I think so. As a matter of fact, the probability from the market is now up to 98% likely that there is a rate cut in September of 25 basis points, and a little bit north of 50% that you get a second rate cut in either November and December. I don't think that's out of the question. Now, I would question the article ringing the bell that everything has been accomplished, because I think we've got a long ways to go to determine whether or not the Fed has actually accomplished things, which what I mean by that is a soft landing, that they actually were able to get inflation down to where they needed to without wrecking the economy and pushing us into a recession, which is typically how the Fed has corrected things. Not that they wanted to push us into a recession on purpose, but that is typically what happened. I also find it interesting in that article that now that somehow 4.1% unemployment signals that that's a number that is close to recessionary terms, but prior to I would say Donald Trump and Biden both having unemployment under 4. Prior to that, 4% was considered full employment. So full employment's 4. 4.1's recessionary. Once again,
you gotta
know the source of who's writing it. It's a journalist who's probably never managed a penny for anybody else in their life. So what do they really know? They know the data points that are put in front of them, and the data points are there is some softness in the labor market, inflation is trending in the right direction, and the Fed does believe that they are in restrictive territory. So that means they don't have to hit their end objective before they start moving interest rates down, because 125 basis point decrease in September doesn't take you from restrictive territory to neutral territory. Neutral, once again, is also an ever-moving target. I think right now the Fed's talking that neutral is probably somewhere around that 2.5 to 3% range. So if we're going to get to neutral and that neutral number doesn't change for them, then we have multiple rate cuts ahead of us before you would get to that level and no longer be in what they consider to be restrictive territory. And until we hit that neutral level and we know what the data points tell us at that, the jobs number, the inflation number, we won't know if the Fed achieved a soft landing. All I can tell you is what I've been telling Glass. A soft landing is still on the table. It's not off the table. We can't say the Fed screwed up or messed anything up. It's still a possibility. But until it is accomplished, we don't know if that's what they're going to do, although it does look right now like the Fed has done a nice job in navigating this potential soft landing.
Yeah, it was in the article, it says, the risk of waiting, the overall economic growth has decelerated gently to around a healthy 2% this year. Unemployment at 4.1 suggests the labor market is neither too hot nor too cold, and stock markets are at record high, that this doesn't look like an economy in need of lower rates. That's the risk of waiting, or I guess the argument for waiting. And for cutting, the biggest risk to cut now is inflation might not be defeated, as you just said, yet a re-acceleration looks quite unlikely without the benefit of hindsight, because really we've never been here before. I mean, we've never had, you know, $5 trillion of money pumped into the economy and inflation ran rapid and shutdowns and all that kind of stuff. We don't really know. But so I think the Fed, to your point, has done a great job. And I think what they say in July will matter. And I'm not sure, do they meet in August or they wait? I think they meet every month or every 2 months.
It's not every month, and it's not always every other month. I don't know how many meetings in the calendar year. I'm pretty sure it's not 12, but I also don't think it's 6. I do believe August is a month that they do skip, so there's a meeting in July, and then you have a September, I think September, then November, December. I'm not sure that there's one in October. But, of course, even in the months that the Fed doesn't have an official two-day meeting in which they determine what they're going to do with interest rates, there are always Fed members out there doing speaking engagements. And Jerome Powell has his speaking engagements both publicly as well as in front of different congressional bodies at the same time. So we won't necessarily go all of the month of August without hearing from the Fed if there isn't an official Fed meeting.
All right, we're going to let you go, Rod. If you are listening, folks, you'll hear Rod again tomorrow on Big Show Friday, about 4:15, 4:20 in the afternoon. And if you listen on Saturday, you get to hear him on Monday to kind of get the week started. So, Rod, we appreciate your time as always, and we'll see you back at the old ranch.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
All right, again, we're going to take a break. But before we come back, we are in the middle of this national convention, right, the Republican National Convention. I watch it every night, and there's no doubt I'm aware, they're aware of what needs to be addressed, right? Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, deficits, debt. They haven't talked a lot about this. And Doug and I talked, it was interesting the selection that Trump made of J.D. Vance, who is a millennial, if elected. He may be the first person, a young millennial, to address these issues because he knows that the bar tab has been left in the hands of the young people. But anyway, I'm not going to talk a lot of politics for sure. But what I am going to say is that portfolio manager Julian Albertini, who is a friend of Doug's, is with First Eagle Global. He also was a guest on our show, puts pieces out occasionally that are just really, really good. And I think the piece he just put out, a short video, I watched it. I had it transcribed. I read it. But Doug came, you've got to hear this, Hayes, because this is exactly the stuff you've been talking about. So when we come back, we're going to talk about it and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug, real quickly, on the political front, you said it best at breakfast the other day that Trump made a Hail Mary over all of the likely picks, which are more established type of people, like a Pence or like a Haley or like a Rubio, to a young guy.
Tim Scott Rubio. The list goes on and on, and he throws this pass all the way down to someone who's been a senator for 2 years. Now, there will be people who say, oh, well, that's not a lot of experience, but they tend to forget that Barack Obama was a senator for 2 years, though he did some other things, too, and so did J.D. Vance. But it is a long toss. Our first facial-haired vice president in 100 years, the second youngest vice presidential candidate, I believe he's the second in history. I think there was another one that was 36. So he has thrown the ball long and far to
the next gen
to a Midwesterner who grew up being raised by his grandmother, because as we saw last night,
I like the pick personally.
Really,
I mean,
I
think it's time for the younger folks to get involved.
Absolutely,
and thankfully he is.
Yeah. And by the way, the comparison of age. The reason we bring this up is we're all aware of President Biden and former President Trump's age, but Kamala Harris is 20 years older than J.D. Vance. And so this pass way down the field is really saying, okay, young folks.
Here, it's your turn.
Let's go for it.
Yeah.
He's a proponent of Bitcoin. There's a lot of different things here that are just.
Yeah, what I kind of sense a little more progressiveness, like in almost libertarian-ish in a way.
Exactly.
With some things. So we'll see. I mean, I honestly kind of like, my wife said, I like this guy. And I've never even heard him speak before. I didn't watch the movie. I've not read the book. It's certainly given me some reason to watch the movie and read the book. I just put a new theater system in at the house, so I've not even watched a movie on yet. So that may be
the first one.
I've listened to the trailer of Top Gun about 10 times because that's pretty cool.
But anyway,
we'll see how it goes. All right, so Julian, good buddy of yours. You visited him out in New York. I had dinner with him. You've went to the French Open or with
U.S. Open
with him. He's a Frenchman. He did an interview with someone from First Eagle, and they were addressing deficits. They were addressing debt, and basically, here's what he had to say in the transcript. Well, first of all, he was asked, with markets reaching all-time highs, we thought it could be interesting to touch on a few potential risk on the horizon. For instance, the U.S. fiscal deficit was projected to reach $2 trillion this year. What that means, folks, is we're going to spend $2 trillion more than what we bring in. The International Monetary Fund recently warned it poses a significant risk to the entire economy. This isn't U.S., folks. This is the world economy. What are your thoughts? So here's what he had to say. He said the U.S. annual federal deficit stands at 6.7% of GDP, which is very large relative to history. And despite the U.S. economy being near full employment, as Rod just talked about, this large fiscal deficit has pushed the national debt close, or really right at, 100% of GDP, which is shy of its peak after World War II. When accounting for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid spending, plus higher interest expense, the Congressional Budget Office projects the national debt to exceed its historical peak within the next 3 years. So here we go. I've been saying this, along with David McKnight, for since 08-09 era, that Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt sucks up, 90% of our revenue that comes in. And to our point, it's got to be dealt with sooner or later. But here's what he said the risks were. The large fiscal deficits have been very stimulative to the U.S. economy, so what that means, folks, is all this money that got pumped into the system and inflated prices, it inflated things. It made things go up, right? So that's been very stimulative. And it's kind of been a rising tide phenomenon to nominal GDP. So we've also had higher corporate earnings, higher asset prices. So such
houses went up in value, 401ks, everything has gone up.
Everything. So such large fiscal deficits are not sustainable. And eventually the rising mineral tide, as he put it, will have to come out. So answering the question, and this was profound to me, because how many times have we been asked, how much longer can this go? We asked Julian the same question when he was on the radio show. When does the rooster come to roost? So he says, so how much debt is too much? He says, we really don't know exactly. But at some point, investors in treasuries, and it's already happening, might demand higher rates to compensate for deteriorating U.S. credit worthiness. So we saw that in a few auctions, mm-hmm. not all of them, but a few of them where we saw the 20-plus year debt not go off that great. And we're seeing cracks in that. And given that the U.S. treasuries are the global risk-free asset, it could have large consequences on the valuation of all asset classes that are on the U.S. dollar. And then he said, this is the one I wanted to point out. He said, finally, large fiscal deficits have political and geopolitical consequences. So he said, Neil Ferguson, the historian, reminded us recently that any great power that spends more on debt service than on defense will not stay great for very long. It's been true of the Roman Empire. It's been true of the British Empire. It's been true of the regime in France. And this rule is being put to a test today by the U.S. with interest payments. This is crazy, folks. Interest payment on national debt exceeding defense budget for the first time in 2024. And he said, ultimately, the swell of public debt that's outstanding in the U.S. is making sovereign paper a risky proposition, in our opinion. What do you think about that, Doug? I mean, it's kind of prophetic in a way.
It's prophetic, and this is big language. It sounds like a novel, but the truth is, folks, we have entered an arena that we have not been to before, and to this degree in certain aspects of this. Now, if you're a listener to this show, you know that David has been talking about these things since 2008, 2009. We had Julian on the show actually in January where we touched lightly on these things. And then here again, he did another interview last October talking about these things. And the nature of the way that he manages money in their firm is it's very cautious. And so when you ask what are the risks out there, these are one of the risks that are out there. What does this really mean over long periods of time? How much is too much debt? We all know stories of personal debt, bankruptcies, things that have gone wrong. And we all, in common sense ways, knows there's only so many levers you can pull, and we're kind of coming to that point.
So I pulled another piece from David McKnight, who just did a recent podcast and had Peter Schiff was quoted. I think maybe Peter was even on there. But just a lot of stuff, too, that is echoing what we've been talking about. He went on to say in his podcast, we've got to either cut spending, which doesn't seem to be happening, or raise revenue, which seems the likely and logical answer. As we get to this point, we've got the 2026 coming up, which is the deadline, right? January 1 of 2026, the 2025 final drive, when tax jobs cut goes away. And obviously, we're in an election year right now, so who knows? A lot of people think that if Donald Trump's elected, that he'll extend the tax cuts and job acts for another 8 years through budget reconciliation. But the question is, should he really do that? I don't know. The Committee for Responsible Federal and Government Spending just came out with this most up-to-date study that said if we continue to keep tax rates low, it will not pay for itself. Of course, they're a bipartisan committee, layering potentially another $5 trillion of debt on top of what we've already spent. There was a piece in here that I thought was really interesting, but they were talking about how much money is in. Oh, they went on to say, you know, we keep talking about laying this debt at the feet of our kids and grandkids, but he says, nope, it's the baby boomers because they're the ones that have all this money in tax-deferred retirement accounts, and in about 10 to 13 years, they're going to need a lot of it, and you're going to be sitting there with a big pile of money that's easy pickings for them. So, again, another big reason to act now while you still can. Of course, the Democrats, if Biden gets reelected, he said, I may do a Roth conversion of my entire IRA in 1 year next year, because the point is they have no appetite for extending the tax cuts. And you know the logic, right? You lower taxes, you have more money, it gets moving in the economy, that creates more tax revenue. You know, so that's the trickle-down concept. And it always has worked until it doesn't work. So it's almost like you have to kind of ebb and flow back and forth between policy to make this thing really go. But I was trying to find that piece where it talks about spending. Oh, spending just seems endlessly out of control. I highlighted the article here. Gosh, I'm going to find here in just a second. But he said a lot of topics that they've approached on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid have been addressed. There's been legislation proposed, and we see higher tax rates coming, but we don't know if it's going to happen sooner or later. But we know it's coming, and I'm just looking at here real quick. But they're talking about individuals and CPAs across the country have been not looking far enough into the future. All they look about is what's happening today, not what's happening in the future. The kick the can down the road. Okay, here we go. Let's see what this said. This was it. So I wouldn't count on politicians taking preemptive or proactive measures because their number one job is to get reelected, and that is their only job, not necessarily to represent you, but get reelected. So to take preemptive action is not going to be popular, and they're not going to do it. He said they just will shore up the programs when they need it and keep kicking the can down the road. Every year that goes by where you fail to take advantage of low tax rates is potentially a year beyond, say, 2030, when you could be paying the highest taxes you've ever seen in your life. So it's just a combination of Julian coming out and saying, hey, listen, folks, we got to do something here. And then David McKnight's guest, I think it was, who was it? I'm just trying to find it here. Yeah, Peter Schiff was one of the guests. Yeah. Talking about, he said, when there's always an opportunity in any challenge, and that's what we're saying right now.
Well, and you know, David, the other thing that Julian was asked about that interview, which is probably I didn't recognize this, but it probably lends into some of this too, is that there are more countries having elections this year.
Yeah, like 60, right?
60 countries are having, you know, presidential type elections this year.
Well, and you're already hearing rumblings in obviously France, right?
Absolutely.
Canada.
Yes.
I mean, all
Spain
around.
And down in Argentina, the guy with the chainsaw that trips phone books and tax.
And I was in Argentina last year. Yeah, and I saw it firsthand.
Yes. Yeah, and so, you know, you look around the world and the world is changing. And so there's also geopolitical risk. And so when we talk about this massive debt, you just don't want to be so far in debt when things change. And I think we've all, if you've been in business, if you have a personal debt, you understand what that means. You just don't want to have too much debt when things change. And that's why, again, you know, we go back to real assets, silver, gold, copper, land, timber, all these different things, and we're not promoting them as investments that do better than tech stocks. What we're saying is there could be an opportunity to diversify and pull some fiat money into some real assets. That's not a recommendation. It's just a thought process. And by the way, it's playing out across that asset class as we speak.
I was reading on in this article. It says, it's all about, you know, what we can do to put the fire out in the here and now, what we can do to react to a crisis in the year and now. And let's throw it out. Let's throw it on the national debt. Let's throw it on the national credit card. So let's take care of this. Boom, we'll put it on the credit card. We'll take care of that. We'll put it on the credit card. And then he went on to say, and let our kids and grandkids get stuck with the bill down the road. But then he said, it's not going to be our kids and grandkids. We're going to need the money sooner than that. I think it's the baby boomers themselves that would be stuck with the bill. I think we will rapidly approach a time where we need revenue in the here and now, and it's no longer the kids and grandkids that will have to foot the bill. I think it's all of the Americans will be footing the bill, and they'll be footing the bill in the next 10 to 15 years. And that's why, guys, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just a math guy, and I'm just like, okay, why age 75 for RMDs for people born after 1960? That's the peak of the baby boom generation. They're predicting $80 trillion of tax-deferred retirement accounts, and they're also saying now $50 trillion in debt at least. And that's all. They're always wrong on the low side, by the way. Mm-hmm. And something's going to have to happen. So I'm just saying, folks, listen, you can't fix the political issues out there. I can't fix the political issues out there. All I can do is take care of me and myself and my family and my community or whatever. But you need to listen and take this to heart. Please, please, please take it serious that if you have a large retirement account, if you've got a couple hundred grand in a retirement account, you can do it if you want to. That's fine. You probably should because your income's probably low. But if you've got $5 million, or $2 million, $5 million in a retirement account and people listening are like, they people have that much money? Yes, they do. You need to do something now to rip the Band-Aid off. People that do it hate it for just a minute, right? But then after they've done it and they take a big breath and they wait a year or two, like, man, I'm so glad I did that. I'm
Absolutely.
So glad I did
it's,
it.
David, we
painful
talked,
planning, let's call
yeah,
it.
Painful planning, but we've always talked about just as you diversify your asset class, you need to diversify your taxes. And this is the time to do it. And I actually posed this question to you the other day, and I'll pose it on air. Talk to us a little bit, and I know you have time and time again, but about capital gains tax. What does that look like? In everyone's, you know, the circles you're running in, what are people thinking about capital gains tax after 2025?
Why don't we put that one on hold, take a break, and we'll come back and talk
That's
about it.
That's a good
it.
One.
All right, guys, it's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back. Your Money with David Hayes, Doug Hughes. You were asking me about capital gains, the future of capital gains.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. Would that be a lever to pull quickly?
Sure. Let's talk about what capital gains. You hold something for a year, you sell it, and it gains a long term. You sell it before a year, it's short term. It's like regular income. It's always been lower for the idea that we want people to sell things and move money around because you get this money multiplier. It's to encourage investment. It's encouraging selling and reinvesting and all of that. So right now, most people pay either 0 or 15%, and it's marginalized, just like our ordinary tax brackets. Well, we know in 2026, it's going to go back to where once you hit a certain income level, all of your income capital gains is 15%, and then you move into a 20%, and sometimes even 25% if you're in a recapture mode with real estate. So the idea right now is that they're going to maybe stick that 20% or more for higher income earners. I think the biggest question is stepped up cost base is going to stick around, which is if I have a highly appreciated asset, I don't care what it is, a farm, a stock, whatever it is, and I die and it goes to my son, my wife, whatever, they get to now inherit that at the day-to-day value. They can sell it. They don't pay any tax. I think for certain liquid assets, because we already saw it with the IRAs, right? They said, okay, this was your dad's IRA, not your IRA. We're not going to let you keep it forever and stretch it out. We're going to make you pay the tax. They decided to do it over at least 120 months. I think they're going to eliminate that. Now, will it be on all types of assets? Probably not. There'll be some discounts on farmland, family businesses, things like that. But I think if you owned a publicly traded company and you bought it like your family did, you've talked about a company 100 years, I don't know, great-grandpa bought it. And it's carried through the family, of course, getting stepped up costs along the way, and you inherit some stock, and you're like, well, okay, here we go again, another stepped up in basis. I can sell it and pay no tax. I don't think that's going to stick around. I think at some point they're going to raise revenues other ways besides just income taxes. But that's why I keep telling people, listen, all this stuff's on the table, all of it. We have the federal estate tax, folks. It's $13 million for each person. That's going to go to six in 2 years. There's a lot of people out there that's going to affect. When I first started, it was $600,000. Went to a million, went to two, went to five, went to 10, went away, went back to five, went back to 10, went to five. You know, it's been all over the place. So that's another place they're going to grab some money. And I don't know where all the money grabs are going to happen from, but they're certainly going to have to happen from you and me and Doug. And it's going to happen in the form of easy money, which is your retirement accounts have never been taxed. These other things, I don't know. Capital gains, maybe. But I think that would be stupid because that would slow down economic growth by raising taxes on capital gains. Maybe 1031 exchanges, maybe they get some limitations, you know, where you can exchange property. I'm in the middle of doing one right now. There's just a lot of ways so that they can get money. Capital gains is certainly one of them. All right, let's take a break, come back. And I got one more segment, then we'll wrap it up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Okay, here's what we're going to do, folks. So we have decided to get 2025, the final drive, What You Need to Know to Win podcast kicked back off. And this is the way we're going to do it. So we're going to take segments from each of these programs. I'll put a little intro and exit together. And they're going to be 8 to 10, maybe 15-minute segments, and just reinforcing just the specific tax stuff that we talk about during the show. And I know we do talk about it a lot, but it's another way for someone to know exactly what we're going to talk about in that particular podcast, and we're going to get them out. So Jimmy's already got a couple of them cut up for me. I just need to go in and record the intro and the exit, and we'll be good to go. So next week, we'll have the question and answer show. You have questions, we have answers. So go to cfci.us and just contact us, put a question in. We will respond to that. I will say this. We don't get a lot of questions through email. Maybe one or two a week tops, and a lot of times it's people we already have connections with. So if you have a connection with us already, know our personal emails, feel free to do that as well. But Doug, we sit around our advisor meeting this week, and I mean question after question, question after question. Most of them, a lot of them, are around Social Security questions. By far, are still the most asked. We have questions on inherited Roth rollovers. That wish someone inherited a Roth IRA, they took money out, they wanted to put it back in. Is that allowable? You have to wait to next week to hear the answer on that. Health insurance, when you are not yet retired, or even in retirement, what kind of health insurance is out there that you need to consider? What if you're semi-retired? That was one that you brought up in the meeting. Early retirement, we mentioned that one already. And the other one is this idea of net unrealized appreciation. If you have appreciated stock from your company that you work for in your 401k, please do not sell it until you listen to the Q&A show next week, because the biggest opportunity alive, especially with the, all these companies having great earnings. We talk about our good friends up the street who do a lot of great things for the community, and everyone knows who I'm talking about. They have a drug now, you shoot yourself and you lose weight, or you get your diabetes a little bit lower. They have a lot of roots here in Bloomington. And give away a lot of money. And no reason I don't mention their names, folks, because if I mention a company's name, I always have to give that long disclosure. So I'm just going to wink, wink, nod, nod at you, and you know who I'm talking about.
A solid Indiana corporation.
There we go. You got it. You got it. But anyway, there's other ones, too, out there that have stock in their 401ks. And the biggest opportunity, do not sell. We'll talk to you why again next week. So anyway, if you have a question, please don't hesitate. You can even call us. I don't care. There'll be someone there to answer your question. It may be Rod, it may be me, it may be Doug, it may be Ryan, it may be Wayne, it may be Jared, it may be Angela. You never know. It could be any of us. So just give us a call if you want to. If that's a good old way you want to handle things, 812-334-3190 or cfci.us. Contact us. We are here to help. We'll be right back to wrap this up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, guys, welcome back. It's the last segment of the program. Hope you enjoyed it. A lot of talk, a lot of chatter, a lot of hopefully motivation. Doug, what did you say one time to me, and I'm putting you on the spot?
Yeah.
When you deliver a message, you have to inspire. Do you know remember what you told me? You have to inspire. You have to, something about action. Can you pull it out? You've got it right there. I wrote it down. It's on my desk. I'll share it to you when we get back. You'll come up with it as soon as we get off the air.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why we should prepare better.
We should, yes. This is for the one-liners, because the one-liners come and go.
Well, you're the king of puns.
I am.
And
I
one-liners.
Yes, absolutely. I'm trying to remember it, to inspire people, to instruct people to...
One more.
Inspire, instruct, and...
What was the other? You came up with one yesterday that I wrote down when I was getting ready to go see.
Oh, sentiment or sentimentality?
Yeah, I love that one. What's the sentiment or the sentimentality?
Right. Well, and actually, I used that in our capital gains conversation, because I was talking about owning farmland. You have sentiment,
right?
Then you have, you know, you love its farmland. Sentimentality was from your family, but the third thing is taxes are a reality, no matter what your sentiment or sentimentality. Same thing with an individual stock if your family worked there.
Well, and I had a person say, when's the best time to sell your farm? I said, when the prices are the highest.
That's right.
Right. It's like, when should I pay my tax? When the taxes are the lowest,
right? Right.
Yeah, and farm prices are way up. But, you know, the technology has given the opportunity for crops, and then we have inflated prices on things. And people are like, why is farmland so high? Well, I can't even squeeze through a corn row anymore like I did when I was a kid. And prices are up. Yields are better. Mm-hmm. You know, their science is better. Everything's better. And that all drives up the prices. It's like if I have a rental property and one pays me $1,000 a month and one pays me $1,500 a month, they're identical sitting next to each other. Which one's worth more? It's the one paying you $1,500.
Exactly.
Works the same way in everything. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'll talk to you again next Thursday. Q&A show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.